If it is decided that the TARP program will be extended beyond its December 31st sunset date, what will that mean for you and the Special Inspector General?
Really, it will have some impact, and that will mean more money will presumably be going out next year and potentially new programs. But ultimately, even if the TARP's buying authority sunsets it to the end of the year, we're still going to be around, and the TARP is still going to be around. All those previously announced programs where money has been committed are going to continue. For example, the President's mortgage modification plan and help for homeowners. All that money is committed and is going to be paid out over the next few years. So even if the program itself sunsets, a lot of these programs that were announced will continue. And our role, of course, which is to ferret out waste, fraud, and abuse, will continue for many years to come. Really, as long as the government is still paying out on these things, as long as we're still owning or managing assets, our office by statute still exists to provide that protection for the taxpayer.
So in other words, this money will be on the street, so to speak, for many more years, and as long as it is, that's when you'll be watching it.
That's correct.
And I was going to ask, too, about the... In particular, some of the money that was given to the auto companies is reportedly perhaps not going to be repaid ever. Is that within the scope of what's allowable under the TARP program? And will you be looking at that type of situation?
Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head on the introduction that some of these may be characterized as investments, but other of these were not. They were straight out subsidies. And I think it would be pretty incredible for us to see a return on the investment or the loans that were made to the auto companies. You know, a lot of those loans were particularly those that were given pre-bankruptcy have essentially been written off. The hope is that the equity of these companies will increase to such incredible amounts that somehow the taxpayer will reap a return. But I don't think that's very realistic. And there's other programs where there's no hope for return of the money. For example, the mortgage modification program is $50 billion of TARP money where there's no expectation that any money will come back. So I think while, yes, there has been some returns, and that's a good thing, and we're going to keep an eye on it. We have some audits relating to making sure the right processes are in place that when there's a chance to even make a profit on an individual subsidy or investment that it's going right, we need to be realistic about what this is over time.
And Mr. Borofsky, could you explain to us the process by which the Treasury receives the money that's coming back from the banks? I mean, there are you know, fees associated with the return of the funds. Do they go back into the Troubled Asset Relief Program or back into the Treasury, or what becomes of those funds?
Well, there's three different types of payments that come back. The repayments of principal. So, for example, if there's a loan or there's an investment in preferred stock, which a lot of the big banks you hear about, Goldman Sachs and the $10 billion that came back, all that money goes back into the TARP. So it's still money that can be reused by the administration if they want to announce a new program or to support an existing program. And that's what we're talking about, what exists until the end of the year or possibly into next year if the Secretary extends it. But the other thing that we talk about are profits. And those are the interest payments, the regular dividends that are paid each quarter, or the money that was received on the sale of the warrants. There's been a lot of attention, and we're looking into that process. That money actually goes directly to pay down the debt. So Treasury doesn't get to reuse the profits, the proceeds from individual transactions. But the actual core principle, that's sort of a revolving amount that exists as long as the Secretary has authorization, which currently expires at December 30th, but as you noted, can be expanded by him through October of next year.
And has there been an accounting of the difference between the $70 billion that we have seen indicated that has come back? Is there an accounting between what was principal, if you will, and what was interest?
It's out there. It's in Treasury's website. If you look really carefully at some of the transaction reports, what we do every quarter, we put out a very comprehensive report on the TARP. It's a lengthy book, a couple hundred pages long, and we'll actually break down those transactions. The next one comes out in mid-October, but to bring transparency to the program, we try to make some very easy to use charts and graphs. They really account for this money, so it's easier for folks to access and see. And I think we've had something about 26 million people who have come to visit our website since we've been created. So a lot of people are very interested in those types of questions, and we provide all that information.
And we're talking to Neil Borofsky. He's the Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. And I was wondering in looking at this money as it's been going out all this time, your job is to look for waste, fraud, and abuse. What are some of the markers or some of the signs or, you know, quivers in the charts that you look for that might be signs of waste, fraud, or abuse?
It really depends on the program. You know, one of the challenges for the TARP is there's about a dozen different announced programs, and each of them have their own potential for fraud and criminal activity. And one, you know, one of our primary functions is to deter, detect, and investigate criminal activity. So if you look at what we've been talking about, which is the investment or injection of capital into the big financial institutions, there what we're looking for are basically the typical markers for securities fraud. You know, did these banks or institutions lie to the federal government to get those billions and billions of dollars? So there you look for things like accounting restatements, you take a look at their books and records, look for those red flags of accounting fraud, those types of issues that we've always looked for in securities fraud cases. So that's one example. Different programs, though, if you look at the mortgage modification, you know, we're seeing a ton of modification rescue. And one thing for your listeners to know, and we've had people come in, law enforcement people either, who've been scammed by these criminals who are out there who are offering for a fee to help people get mortgage modifications. All these modifications are free. You don't need to pay anyone to do it, and this is a fraud that's really exploding in all 50 states, and we have a number of investigations. And if I can use this opportunity just to warn your listeners, you do not need to pay for an Obama modification. And if you feel like that you've been victimized by any of these scams or frauds, please contact us. We'll look into it, and we'll help bring these people to justice.
Yeah, you actually have, you can refer these cases for criminal prosecution. Which would you say, of the programs that we have out there, which would you say is the most prone to waste, fraud, and abuse?
That's a difficult question, because we've got our hands full in all of these programs right now, to be honest with you. You know, the early programs were much more, the capital purchase program, which is about 650 different banks. Although these are sophisticated institutions and a regulated institution, there's very few controls or tripwires to protect against fraud. So we're very busy looking at those that receive TARP funds and those who apply for TARP funds. But if you look at, so on the dollar amount, the big amounts, because these transactions are, you know, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars, even billions of dollars. So that's a real problem. But if you look at the ones that impact the most people, the retail types of fraud, that's going to be the mortgage modification program, where you have much more individual victims, individual homeowners, smaller frauds, but much more widespread.
And when would you expect to see those cases start to make their way forward?
Well, we've already had some cases that have gone through. We prosecuted an individual or supported the prosecution of an individual in Tennessee who was trying to rip people off selling something called TARP-backed securities, and he recently was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment for that, which we think is a good symbolic marker of how the justice system is going to treat those who try to take advantage of this historical program. We've done some civil work with the FTC to shut down some actions. And I think we have some stuff coming up. You know, we're supporting the New York State Attorney General and his investigation of Bank of America, and they've announced that they may have some charges coming up pretty soon. We're working with them. And we've also have done some work, which has been publicly announced, the investigation into Colonial Bank down in Florida, which had applied for about $500 million of TARP funds. So there's a lot of things in the works. I can't talk about a lot of them that have not been made public investigations, but I think that you're going to see things through the end of this year start making their way through the system and seeing charges.
Yeah, the mortgage modifier scams are pretty easy to see how that works, and it's pretty clear what those people were up to. In the case of a really big institution like Bank of America, is it possible that some of the what could later turn out to be acts of fraud or malfeasance could be non-intentional just because the rules are so complicated and the books that they're dealing with are so complex?
Well, that's why these investigations take time. And I don't, not to single out or even discuss Bank of America, but when you're
Understood.
Dealing with these complex financial institutions, these aren't cases that can be done in a couple of weeks and sometimes in a couple of months. Now, I've told my investigators that, you know, sometimes these cases take 2 or 3 years to investigate, that's not acceptable. We don't have that time frame. But they do take time because obviously the last thing you want to do is go recklessly into charges. And we work with Department of Justice and other prosecutorial entities to make sure that we're 100% right. But there's also the opportunity for civil charges where there is a lower standard of proof. Sometimes negligence would just be enough, even if somebody doesn't intentionally commit the act, but should have known better or should have done it. So we also support a number of civil actions. We work very closely with the SEC and, as I said, the different state attorneys general.